It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along with my good buddy Kyle from the Grange Barber. What's up, man?
Going on, dude. We approach week zero of college football 48 hours out.
The money man, Kyle from the Grange Barber.
I don't know about that.
By the way, I just want to tell you, I just remembered this. I actually met a lady the other day at my work.
You met a lady?
And she was from Jason, North Carolina, ladies and gentlemen.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ugly was she?
It's all relative, my friend. Anyway, how are you, Bubba Rosenbaum, in the western part of the state?
Doing well. Opening night for high school football tomorrow, if the weather will allow a lot of teams to get it in. And like Kyle said, week zero, so ready to watch the Florida-Miami game on Saturday night.
Arizona-Hawaii also.
By the way, guys, I have to say there's my kids, we've got some actual those TV, 32-inch TVs from Walmart for $118. I was like, man, I could get a whole bunch of those for my future man cave. Whenever I have a man cave, I'm going to get a whole bunch of those TVs because $118 for a TV now is incredible.
Yeah. they've come down quite a bit as flat screen HD LCD technology has evolved.
And the Roku built-in. I mean, are you kidding me? Good stuff there where you can put a whole bunch of sports apps on there. And speaking of which,
Dave,
I want to get
did we get a major sponsorship from Walmart and you're not sharing this with us?
No, I usually
okay.
don't mention.
I just want to make
you
sure.
Guys always mention that I'm in Walmart. So
I just want to make sure.
Bentonville, Arkansas, we need to go down there and say, look, y'all, we've named Walmart way too many times in our podcast and you owe us money. No. The TVs, though, are a great deal. And my kids are thrilled that they have a TV now at their grandparents' house, so in their bedroom there. So I did a good deal.
Dave, your dad's a vet. He's struggling to buy a TV?
No, I was actually getting one for them because they're actually the room, we actually cleaned it out. They're going to have a themed room and everything, so it's going to be really cool. So,
all right.
Anyway, I didn't want to go down that path too much, but one more question for you guys, one and a half for you, and that is for Chinese food. I just had some. What is your go-to? Do you have like a go-to meal, or do you? Are there things on the menu? I'm going to ask you this real quick for both of you, and then we'll talk some football.
Kung Pao chicken would be my favorite. Love it with the spices, with peanuts. It's great. Love it. I'm also a big fan of egg rolls or spring rolls.
Yeah.
Mandarin chicken. I love Mandarin chicken. I'm also a big fan of the steamed dumplings.
Oh, my God. My kids love those.
Mugu Gai Pan's another favorite of mine. And then if we're gonna stick on the Asian cuisine, but dive, you know, go away from Chinese food. Something going on at your house, Dave?
Yeah, the kids are going crazy, but you know, makes
yeah. And then I enjoy Thai food a lot. Pad Thai is of course classic, and things like that.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I'd say.
Bubba, what about you?
Yeah, General Tso's chicken and sesame chicken, orange chicken. Those are some of my favorites. And then, like Kyle said, love the egg rolls, fried rice.
Right.
Getting
into this podcast.
No, I wanted to ask you guys that because one thing that drives me crazy is just simply. It seems a lot of times you go to, I guess what I like about restaurants, I'll say this really quick. I love atmosphere. And I remember growing up, there was a restaurant my grandparents took me to. It was this really cool Chinese restaurant, sit down, like dim lit. It was like, I love that kind of, but it doesn't seem like there's many places like that anymore that you can go to.
Dave, come over here sometime when you got a little extra time to LaGrange.
Okay.
And me and Jessica will take you out over to Goldsboro and take you to our favorite Chinese place. It's called China House. It's been there probably 30 years. It's over by the Air Force Base. It's old school. everything is served. They actually, you remember a lot of Chinese restaurants, they would push things out on carts and bring it out.
Oh, my God, I love that.
And serve it, and they give you a serving plate and then give you the plate with the food.
Yeah.
They still do that there. It's dimly lit, like you're talking about. You'd love it.
Oh, my God. There was a place in Durham that's no longer there on Hillsborough Road called China Inn, and that's where I got hooked on as a really young boy on – that's the way, in my mind, a Chinese restaurant should be. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I'm not anti-Chinese
food. And the food quality
right.
is 100 times better at places like that versus the when you go to the strip mall, the Chinese takeout place at Walmart where everything tastes the same and it all tastes cheap. Yeah, it's a totally different thing. You're right. Come over here sometime. We'll go to China House there on Berkeley Boulevard right by the Air Force Base in Goldsboro. And it's great, and they are also not sponsoring the show, guys.
Yeah, exactly. But if you would like to sponsor the show, you can just simply email us at thesportsobj@gmail.com. We'd love to.
Yeah. Seriously, if you guys want to advertise on the podcast, and like Dave said, email us at thesportsobj@gmail.com. Put it in the subject line, advertise, and we will get back to you.
Yeah, they'll give us $2 million. I'm just kidding. Inside joke. Anyway, guys, I have to say that I'm tickled to death about football period being here. High school, we have college this week, and then football, pro football in a couple weeks. It's just what a beautiful time of year. And it's hard to believe. I think this is the most excited I've been about football season, and especially college football with East Carolina in many years. And I love Ruff and McNeil, but there's something – even going back, I would say probably, I don't know, maybe Skip Holtz era, the championship years maybe. That's been, I'm that excited. Even I'm not saying we're going to win a championship this year, but it's something about this year that already feels special.
Yeah, it's the most excited I've been going into a college football season since going into the 2014 year.
Okay, that's fair.
It's just knowing that we have a program that's going to grow. We have a coaching staff that knows what they're doing. You know, you listen to Mike Houston in these post-practice interviews, and he gets you so fired up. Things he says, he's no nonsense. He's not going to – Coach Houston just is not going to accept being bad.
No.
It's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight, but, man, it gets me fired up, and it's fun to see that it just knows. I mean, I don't have a doubt in my mind that in time Coach Mike Houston is going to win here.
Oh, there's no question about it. You look at, and for us, we have a situation now where we can win, I think, a number of games. So, by the way, guys, are you going to – here's the question. I'm going to put you on the spot, an easy one. Are you guys going to the ODU game, Old Dominion?
I will not be able to. Riley has a baseball tournament that day. It's one that I had been considering, but got his baseball schedule here a couple weeks ago, and unfortunately his team does have a game that day. But the good news is that there's only one conflict in terms of home games, so that's good. I am still considering Navy because there is no baseball tournament that weekend.
I've considered it. I've even considered about trying to put in for media credentials, but probably not, but it's still out there as a possibility. What about you, Dave?
I'm definitely going, so I was hoping one of y'all would say they're going, but...
Oh, you're going, okay. When did you say that?
I took off that day back when
ticket?
I saw the schedule. No, I need tickets. So
yeah, you better get tickets. It's going to sell out.
Yeah.
Have you thought about just trying to get media a press pass?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that may be your best bet because they sell out.
Yeah, so I don't think anybody cares. I'm going to the game, but I was just curious about that very thing. Hopefully we can get a huge crowd. There's a lot of great people in the 757 that went to East Carolina. We have by the way, guys, we met at Media Day. Well, Kyle, you were there, but Bubba knows as well. The guys, let's give the guys a shout-out from Seven Cities. They were in the Tidewater area, and I know they cover the Pirates, and we're going to have them on the podcast, and we'll be on their show. But nice meeting them, and great guys, and look forward to – that's what's great about – and I'll just say this for the members of the media. I can speak for myself, but generally speaking, members of the media get along with each other, and some people don't, and that's okay. That's their choice, but I don't walk in a room going, I hate that guy. I hate that that woman from whatever station or whatever.
Right.
I've just never been that way.
Well, no. I mean, you know, I don't either, and I don't know any of these people up until now personally. You know, I've had a chance to talk to Troy and Cliff and some of the guys at Pirate Radio, and obviously Patrick Johnson from 94.3.
We like him.
In terms of knowing them personally, no, I don't know any of them well enough to have any opinions on them beyond just, you know, hey, how you doing, kind of.
Right.
So, no, I don't have any ill will towards anybody in the media.
Bubba does, but we'll hold that. I won't hold that against Bubba.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to get along with most folks. So
he wouldn't even go to Media Day. I mean, he says, screw those fake media assholes. I'm not going. And so he didn't show up.
Yeah, he held out for more money. But anyway, thank you for everybody at Media Day. We've had a lot of people.
You know what I hear? I hear Bubba actually wanted $2 million to show up.
Yeah.
But he did. He wouldn't resort to anything. Anyway, I will ask you this, guys. Would you ever, we could play that game here sports-wise. So would you ever, here's an easy one for you, Kyle. Would you ever pull for North Carolina / NC State if it meant that East Carolina would somehow get into the college football playoff?
Of course.
Okay, so you're going to do that?
Because, at the end of the day, it's pulling for East Carolina. If somehow, like, let's use this in a situation where it would make sense. Let's say, for whatever reason, our bye game in 2022 or wherever it's going to be is Clemson. And, well, no, I don't guess North Carolina beating Clemson would help us get in the playoffs. Yeah. I don't, you're going to have to give me a scenario where that helps us. Okay, I got it. Let's say we beat North Carolina, and then North Carolina has a chance to beat Clemson in the ACC title game, and we're undefeated also, and that win's going to, you know, strengthen us enough so we make the playoff. Of course I'm going to root for North Carolina in that situation because it benefits East Carolina. I'm sure you would too, Bubba.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of those things, like you said, I mean – no, you're not going to pull for those guys, but under certain circumstances, absolutely, because it's pulling for the Pirates.
So what about you?
Because, so, I mean, why would I – obviously, those circumstances are very few and far between, but if something like that did arise, I mean, it would be a no-brainer because my love of – seeing East Carolina succeed is far greater, not even close, rather than watching somebody else fail.
Yeah, definitely.
And we more than likely we're going to get to that shot where we will definitely be. I still believe this under Mike Hughes, New Year's Six Bowl. I really believe that we're going to get to that height under him. I don't know how long it's going to take. I'm not going to say it. Obviously, it's this year. I'm not crazy. But I do believe if you look at the talent that I'm just blown away is something I don't normally look at. Thank God for Steven Igo and Mark Lindsay. Those guys are recruiting gurus. They're friends of the podcast. They follow it closely. I'm following it closer because of them. And now when you look at Mike Houston and you're seeing his staff work their tails off and they're getting these guys, oh my gosh. I mean, they're getting guys that, that I believe that when they put them all together, they're going to be, like I said, multiple 10-win seasons. I really believe that, like, maybe year 4 or 5. I don't know how many years Houston will be here, but not that it matters right now. But I really believe that Houston will get us to that level where if we lose the game, we'll be pissed. Like, pissed beyond, I'm not saying we don't, not that we like to lose now, but we're so used to losing now.
Right, when you get used to winning again, where a loss is going to piss us off. I think we'll get back to that level too. As far as, you know, whether we'll make a New Year's Six Bowl, who knows? Time will tell. That's, you know, right now I'd be happy with making the Cure Bowl in Orlando. But
oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
Speaking of losing and the impact it has on you, obviously Coach Houston was not a Pirate technically yet. I mean, but he was hired very, I guess, what, 24 hours, 48 hours after that NC State debacle a season ago where the perfect storm hit and for that 58-3 loss. But Coach Houston this week, a couple of days ago, was talking about that at the press conference. Actually, I think it was yesterday.
It was.
Yesterday being Wednesday evening. But he was talking about it and just saying watching film of that game, the cut-ups and the game as a whole just made him absolutely sick to his stomach.
Yeah, he said it made him sick to his stomach. He said it's been a long time since he's been a part of a game like that, and he don't plan on going back to that now. So there was things in that game that are unacceptable that he will not tolerate, such as lack of effort, not tackling, poor discipline. You know, things
not
like
coming off the football.
Not coming off the football. I mean, it's just he said will not be optional, and you know, you're either going to do those things, or you ain't going to play. By the way, Bubba, Donnie Kirkpatrick made that statement again. If you don't block at receiver, you're not going to play.
I saw that. I thought about you as soon as I saw it. I started laughing. He said, either you're going to block or you ain't going to play.
Exactly. So nobody coaches receivers to block downfield quite like Donnie K.
One of the plays that I think of most when I think of receivers blocking downfield is that play. A couple plays that come to mind. One was in Blacksburg when there was just a play where I'm trying to remember whether it was a throw and a catch, but then you had after the catch, you had a long run, whatever the case was, Cam Worthy making some tremendous blocks downfield.
Yeah.
And then also the one where we had like 3rd and 30 and ran a like an outside zone play to Breon Allen, and he took it to the house against the Tar Heels. And there was some tremendous downfield blocking on that play by Zay Jones and others.
Yeah, it's just that's something that we block so aggressively. I think at times defenders didn't know how to handle it. They were almost shocked by it. And I would imagine throughout a game it wears you out as the defender. And, you know, you see it on tape, you got to prepare for it, practice against it. I mean, it's just I love that kind of effort, attitude and play is coming back to East Carolina.
No doubt about it. Hey, by the way, Kyle, we always talk joke, but Mike Tyson always said everybody has a plan until you get in the ring. You know, everybody has a plan until you get on the field, and until you get hit like that, it's definitely big time. And especially when you look at Bubba, you're the expert here, obviously playing the game. But, I mean, when you break it right down to it, football is a game of blocking and tackling, and that's two things that we haven't been able to do well, and because of that, we've lost a lot of games, period. Drop the mic.
No kidding, man. Tackling is something that he talked about. We're going to, you know, somebody asked at the post practice yesterday, do we still have a tackling problem? He said we'll find out next Saturday.
I believe it'll be much improved. They've been practicing. I mean, my God, every day you see them practicing a lot. And practicing a lot, tackling a lot, sorry, at practice. And that makes me feel so happy because, Bubba, you know, playing the game, if you coach the game, you play the game, you know that when you play like you practice, you hear that cliche all the time, but that's the reason why it's a cliche. And that's why when we didn't tackle and we didn't block or do certain things, there's one thing that Mike Houston does not like, and he said that he didn't like his team to be last few years is a soft team, and that's the way he felt like the team has been, and where people are tapping out after a few plays and they're going just halfway instead of like going live and thud and different drills they have going on, that you can't expect a guy to go out there and all of a sudden turn on the light bulb will come off. It's kind of a natural. Knowing you play sports, if you have to think about it, then you're probably not going to be able to be successful.
No, yeah, and you learn how to tackle in practice,
right?
You gotta you got to do it live, as Rick Smith would say. And if you don't do it live in practice, you're not going to be able to do it come game day.
Hell, you got to do it live.
Thank you, Coach Smith. Thanks.
We need to get Coach back on. Miss him. And I think a lot of his daughter, Beth, who is a fan of our podcast, so appreciate her very much. We have her back on. She's, I tell you what, she's a tough cookie. And you know why? Because of her dad. She definitely is awesome and definitely one that is like him and being a straight shooter. I'm very, by the way, speaking of which, guys, can you talk about this? Because you guys told me before we started recording, what's the deal with the Marshall Virginia Tech controversy you told me about that was from a few days ago? I'd love to get your
last year comes out now that there were some Hokies that were seniors who were disappointed in the way the season went that didn't feel like going to a bowl game. They needed to beat Marshall for bowl eligibility last year, game of the year. They were playing the Southern Herd because of our game being canceled against them. And there were some seniors who wanted to throw the ball game and kind of lay down. And they decided not to and went ahead and went through with effort and trying to win the game and went to a bowl game. Me and Bubba were discussing that. And what had that been East Carolina? What if we decided to reschedule that game the last game of the year? And then they did go through with laying down. Wow. I mean, that could have been Coach Blackwell beating the Hokies in that situation. And Mike Houston maybe would have never been hired. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just a weird thought. Because that could have easily been us playing that game.
And Dave, an exact quote from a current Hokie player about that. Some of those guys that were involved in that situation have transferred out, not surprisingly. But recently we had the opportunity to catch up with Florida Hall of Famer and SEC Network analyst Chris Doering, and let's talk to him right now.
All right, we're 72 hours from kickoff. I'm very excited for the opening weekend of college football, in a sense, week zero. And the biggest game this weekend is, of course, the matchup between the Florida Gators and the Miami Hurricanes. And now to talk about that matchup, welcome into the show, Florida Hall of Famer and SEC Network analyst Chris Doering. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, good to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We appreciate your time. I'm very excited about the start of the college football season, and I know you are as well. So just taking a look at this matchup, we're entering year two of the Dan Mullen era. 10 wins last year for the Gators, and I know they're expecting big things in Gainesville this year. And so what can you tell us about the season as a whole, and then we'll take a look at this matchup in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a situation where clearly Dan Mullen came in and turned things around probably quicker than he did, just probably underutilized and underdeveloped. So they won a lot of close games last year and had some things go their way. But I think the expectation level is obviously very high, and people feel like that they got the right guy, which is important. So one of the things that I worry about is knowing that this team has such a difficult schedule this year with Miami at the top of the schedule and finishing with Florida State at the end, drawing LSU and Auburn from the west and playing an improved Eastern Division from top to bottom. So it could very well be a team that is better and doesn't necessarily reflect the improvement in the win-loss column.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that really jumped out to me as well, looking at the Gators schedule. And taking a look at last year, that's what one of the things that really jumps off the page. I know it didn't necessarily start the best, but as the season wore on, the development of Felipe Franks, and that's what he ended up finishing the year with a 24-6 touchdown to interception ratio. And obviously, Dan Mullen is someone a lot of folks refer to him as the quarterback whisperer, so maybe we shouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why he was hired to come to Gainesville was, one, because of his ability to coach up quarterbacks. I mean, he's had a wide array of quarterbacks from the time that he's been at Mississippi State, and even before, as he's been a coordinator throughout college football, is that he's able to take guys and fit the scheme around them rather than trying to make a guy, you know, fit to his scheme. So I like the flexibility. I like his ability to coach the position as a whole. And you mentioned it, the 6 interceptions is a marked improvement from what he had his redshirt freshman year. continuing to improve on being more judicious with the football, I think is ultimately the important goal for this season. But I think he understands his role much better in this offense. I think he understands more so that he can affect the game, not just by throwing the football, but by impacting it with his legs as well. You saw that towards the end of the season. He became a very adept short yardage goal line runner. And in that Michigan game in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, they really fairly simplistic game plan. Florida spread him out with formations and forced Michigan to defend him either by putting an extra safety back, and in which that allowed Florida to run the football with the quarterback, or, you know, dedicate a guy up into the box, leaving single coverage on the outside, and then they were utilizing a lot of the quick passing game in order to beat one-on-one coverage. So I think that, one, schematically, this coaching staff does a great job of putting players in position to be successful. I think they also do a great job of minimizing deficiencies, which was one of the issues last year. The offensive line was not very good early in the season, but they did a great job of trying to compensate for the deficiencies there by utilizing a lot of the quick passing game and getting not allowing those defensive linemen to take advantage of what was a deficiency for them. So they got better and better on the line as the year went on, but I really think this coaching staff has instilled a cultural change that has created confidence in that they feel like they can go out there and they can compete with anyone. That includes Georgia. I mean, they took Georgia into the fourth quarter in a one-possession game, didn't ultimately win that game, but I think they gained some confidence just by going toe-to-toe with the team that everybody feels like is the best in the East, and it'll be interesting to see how that game plays out this year.
I was asking on the other side of the ball, how are the Gators looking on defense this year?
I think the defense is going to be the strength of this team. Florida's been stout on the defensive line for the last few years, and that'll be the case this year as well. A deep position for them where they can rotate a bunch of guys in. Jonathan Grenard transferred from Louisville. He had a chance to play in Todd Grantham, the defensive coordinator's scheme, when Grantham was at Louisville, Jonathan Grenard's freshman year. So he's familiar with the scheme as a whole, but he'll fill the shoes of Ja'Kai Polite, who's moved on to the NFL. Florida lost Marco Wilson at the corner spot last year due to injury. That forced true freshman Trey Dean to have to play a lot of downs. So they get Marco Wilson back to complement C.J. Henderson. Trey Dean moves inside to the star position, which is one of the most important positions in this defense. So I feel really good about where they are. I do worry about the depth in the secondary a little bit. But I think this is a team that can be really tough, especially as we get into talking about Miami, a team that didn't do a lot on offense yet last year that had the redshirt freshman quarterback. It's going to be tough for the Canes to score against what I think will be a pretty stout defense.
Speaking of that quarterback situation in Miami, obviously, and going in, as folks were wondering, Jaren Williams or Tate Martell. And like you said, it seems as though it's going to be Williams under first-year head coach Manny Diaz. So talk a little bit about what the Hurricanes have around Williams as far as helping him out.
Well, I mean, I think this is it's kind of similar to what Florida's situation is. You know, Florida lost four or five starters from the offensive line last year. Miami's going to be starting a pair of freshmen at the tackle spots, at left tackle. They got a true freshman. And at right tackle, they got a redshirt freshman, so that's not ideal having to start right away against a defense that's as good as what Florida's is. So I expect Todd Grantham to bring a lot of pressure, give them a lot of different looks, and try to confuse them up front. But they do have some speed at the wide receiver position, and the running game should be stout again for Miami as well. So it'll just be interesting to see how much pressure Todd Grantham wants to dial up on a quarterback and Jaren Williams, who hasn't played a lot of snaps. And I expect he's always aggressive with his play calling, but I expect him to be even more aggressive as they take on a young quarterback.
You talk about the matchup on that side of things as far as the Florida defense against the Miami offense. And how do you see the Florida offense stacking up against the Miami defense?
This is as talented as an offense as Florida's had in a long, long time. I mean, you look at the skill position, Florida's about eight or nine deep at the wide receiver spot. Running backs, they got a trio of guys that should be able to be very productive there. LaMichael Perine is probably the headliner of that group. Malik Davis comes back from an injury last year, and Damian Pierce had a nice breakout freshman year. So those guys should be pretty experienced and complement one another carrying the football. I think the tight ends are a real wild card for X factor for this offense. And Kyle Pitts is the guy that Dan Mullen and his offensive staff have used in a bunch of different ways, including splitting him outside, creating some mismatches lined up in the wide receiver spot, much like they did with Cornelius Ingram when he was the coordinator here. So I think you'll see some of that. But the question mark is, you know, if you can't protect up front, if you can't create running lanes, all that talent's for naught. And so can Felipe Franks get time to throw? As I mentioned, four or five starters are gone from the offensive line last year. They do have some young guys that are very talented, just unproven at this point. But I really think the key on the offensive line is Brett Hagee, a guy that's been injured a lot over the last two seasons, but has the flexibility to play both at right tackle, where he'll start, and also at center should they need him there. So I think he's the guy at the end of the year you look back and see he's got the potential to be an all-SEC type performer when it's all said and done.
Chris, taking a look at this matchup between Miami and Florida, just this series in general, I mean, this is a game that hasn't been played since 2013. It's not played all that frequently. So from a Gators perspective, with you providing that, what's your perspective on this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lifelong Gator fan. I grew up here in Gainesville, going to all the games since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. My parents are both from Miami, so interestingly enough, I've attended a bunch of Miami, Florida games over the years, both here in Gainesville and in the Orange Bowl back in the day. So it was a big rivalry that I clearly had a lot of disdain for the Hurricanes, as is the case with older Gator fans. But the series went away on an annual basis after 1987. So unfortunately, that's one of my big regrets about my time in Gainesville as a player, was that I never got an opportunity to play against the Hurricanes. In fact, we didn't play them the entire decade of the 90s. It's recently been played here on a one-off situation, but the announcement about a home-and-home series in 2024 and 2025 is a start, and I hope it's a game that gets played more frequently, because there was a time where the Florida State, Miami games with one another determined not only the supremacy in the state, but it was determined, you know, who some of the prominent teams nationally were. So I hope this is a game that we can get to play a little bit more frequently. It's a game that Florida has a ton of fans down in the South Florida area, big alumni base down there, a great fertile recruiting area. So Florida playing down in South Florida is an advantage, more so not only just to renew the rivalry, but just to have a presence down there with some guys that there's obviously a lot of talent in that area that they'd like to get some exposure to.
General, what are your thoughts on these neutral site matchups? I believe this is a Camping World Stadium and Week Zero as a concept in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be something that starts to maybe go away a little bit, because we've seen so much scheduling out of conference with home and home games, which is important. I mean, fans are tired of paying season ticket prices for games against FCS opponents and non-Power 5 teams. And I love the fact that we're going to get some great matchups, between Power 5 conference teams in their home stadiums. Georgia's been a great example of what you can do with that home-and-home series against Notre Dame and getting them back in Athens this year. So I love that. I mean, I think it is important to have some of these neutral site games. It gives you more flexibility with the scheduling and also puts some money in your pocket. But at the end of the day, I think the health of the college football game as a whole is dependent upon getting more fans out to the stadium. And that only happens if you're bringing good opponents into your home stadium. So hopefully that's going to continue to be a trend that we see more of as the years go on.
Absolutely. Chris, I know you're running short on time. We certainly appreciate your time talking about this matchup. We'd love to have you back on later in the season and catch up and talk some more college football. But for our listeners, go ahead and tell folks where they can follow you on Twitter.
Yes, my Twitter account is at Chris Doering, Chris Doering, and look forward to another season in the studio with Dari Noka and Gene Chizik. We're on Friday nights with the preview shows and all day Saturday and Saturday night with our triple header that appears on the SEC Network.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Chris. We'll catch up again soon.
That sounds good, man. We'll touch base later in the year. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Chris. A great honor to have him on. Thank you, Bubba. Always, I'm bowing to you. I know we have some other big guests coming on, which we'll talk about later, but very happy to have him on. And, guys, with week zero, it's here. And what do you think about, you want to talk about the matchups a little bit and then go to our next guest?
Yeah, there's only a couple of FBS matches to talk about, but they're good ones. You got Florida versus Miami in Orlando from Camping World Stadium, neutral site.
That's going to be cool.
That's going to be 7 o'clock on ESPN Saturday night. Actually going to be on ESPN, the ACC Network, and the SEC Network. It's going to be a triple cast. So you have Florida, Miami, and then in the nightcap on CBS Sports Network, you have Arizona, Outlet, Hawaii. So a couple of really good games there. Also in the FCS ranks this weekend, you got Villanova, who's typically an FCS power, at Colgate. That'll be a 12 p.m. Start on CBS Sports Network. And then Samford will take on FCS perennial power, Youngstown State. That's the neutral site game in Montgomery at 3 p.m. on ESPN. So two good FCS games, two good FCS games to occupy your day Saturday as we get a little sneak peek into the 2019 college football season. I mean, pretty much we talked about it, man. You got Florida, Miami, Arizona, Hawaii, and then a couple of good FCS games with Villanova, Colgate, and Samford, Youngstown State. So,
and Bubba's having everybody over. If you're a Pirate fan, come over. Bubba's cooking like chicken for everybody. So come on out to Bubba's house in China Grove, and we're going to like have a big party, Pirate Nation style.
Yeah, well, My huge house. We'll move that to Village Park.
All right. Well, if it's a big and successful, then we can just move it there, and that'll be it's Bubba's house. So it's gonna be great. All right, guys. Speaking of great, we had a chance. Bubba, nice get as well. This next guest, we always brag about how great Bubba does, and very excited to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, college football coaching veteran of more than 40 years. Spent time with the likes of Philip Fulmer and Dabo Swinney, to name a couple. Also spent some time with Mac Brown at North Carolina in his first stint when they built that program up from back-to-back one-win seasons to a 10-win team. So right now let's catch up with college football coaching veteran Dan Brooks.
Right here in the heart of August, college football season is upon us, and we're just a couple weeks away from opening day, and we're very excited to have now a guy who spent more than 40 years in the business, Coach Dan Brooks. And Coach, welcome into the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be getting a chance to visit with you guys.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to catch up. And Coach, I know back in the day, you were originally from North Carolina and you attended App State back in the late 60s. So can you talk about your high school years and what led you to Boone?
Well, I was a very small school and signed with Appalachian out of high school and then went up there on freshman ball and got hurt. So I wasn't in Boone very long. My wife's actually an Appalachian graduate, but we both went there. And so I got hurt and wasn't a real smart 18-year-old, but I quit and went home. And Vietnam War was going on, and I had a low draft number in those days. You had draft numbers, and so went in the military for 3 years and came back out and went to Western Carolina and played and got hurt again. And then my college coach said, I hadn't had a chance to visit with you enough. I'm going to make a coach out of you. So where I grew up, and in those days, you just said, yes, sir, and went about your business. So went about it from all the way from that day until I retired.
Coach, which branch of the service did you serve in, and did you see any time in Vietnam?
No, we didn't. I was in the Army, but that was kind of the phase down time when I went through. I was part of a Special Forces Special Operations Detachment, and they sent us to Okinawa. We were going on to Vietnam, and about the time you young guys remember, you studied in history, the William Cali stuff and all that, and they pulled all special forces out of Vietnam. And so I spent 19 months on a little island out in the ocean, Okinawa.
Wow, okay.
And well, terminated from there. So.
Now, Coach, I know you were at Western Carolina from 73 to 76.
Right.
When did Bob Waters arrive there? Because I know he was there in the 80s. Was that just prior to him? Or?
No, Coach Waters actually was my coach. He's
okay.
The reason I'm in this business, in my opinion. Him and the other coaches there, Bob Sutton and Don Powers. But Coach Waters' first season at Western Carolina was 1969. And
okay.
Bobby Waters was a guy that people might remember, older people, as an old shotgun quarterback, played for the San Francisco 49ers behind John Brody, and then got into coaching college football and was the head coach at Western from 69 to 88. Great man, way ahead of his time throwing the football.
So, after your time at Western Carolina, and talk about your path into coaching, how you decided to pursue college coaching.
Well, like I say, I played in the fall of 73. I got out of the Army in December of 72 and went to Western for spring practice in 73 and played that fall. And then in the spring of 74, got my knee torn all up, everything in it, and then tried to rehab and come back in the fall. 74 and got hurt again, and the doctors told me I probably shouldn't worry about trying to play anymore, and because of injuries. And so that's when Coach Waters called me in to sit down, and I actually, you know, you still don't know what you want to do. You want to play ball, but Coach Waters said, I'm going to make a coach out of you. So I was a student assistant coach. In those days, you didn't have enough people. Now they got so many people running around, but you didn't have enough people, so I was a student assistant coach on the defensive side and actually physically went and scouted the other team that we were going to play. So my first year coaching, I only saw one game, and that was the last one.
After your time at Western Carolina, what was your next stop? Because I know you, there in the 80s, you spent some time on, I guess, Charlie Pell's staff and then Galen Hall at Florida.
Right. I left Western and thought I wanted to be a high school coach the rest of my life. And told some people that, and Coach Waters wanted me to stay in GA one more year. And I thought, no, I was going to go coach in high school the rest of my life. And so went to Kings Mountain, North Carolina, and coached 7 years. I was assistant two, and then became the head coach way too young and athletic director at 26 years old. And so we were fortunate, had some very good players, and a guy you guys may remember in that area, but I had a guy named Kevin Mack. Played tailback for me, and then he played at Clemson and played for the Cleveland Browns for many years, the old Bynum and Matt deal at the Cleveland Browns. And then another guy that came over y'all's way played at A.L. Brown in Kannapolis. After I left Kings Mountain, he went to Kannapolis. His dad was a minister and moved, and so he only was in Kannapolis 1 year, but people associate him with A.L. Brown in Kannapolis. But he was in Kings Mountain when I coached there. Left Kings Mountain after the 82 season and went with Charlie Pell at the University of Florida as a part-time guy. And a year later, I got on full-time. And so from 84 until 2016, I was full-time at that level.
So that connection, or how do you actually end up going to Florida with Coach Pell? I know he had obviously been at Clemson prior to that for a couple seasons and had an awful lot of success. So was that a connection that you had made when you were at Kings Mountain and he was at Clemson? Or
it was. He some of the assistants, and then they recruited my school hard. Of course, Kings Mountain sits right there on the North Carolina-South Carolina border. And so they recruited our school hard and got to know most of their staff. And so I went down and worked their football camp some, and then after Coach Pell left and Danny Ford took over, I still went down and worked some of their camps and that kind of thing, and then got to know them, and they had an opening. This is a long time ago, but each side of the ball, offense and defense, used to have one guy that was a part-time guy and you could do everything except go recruit. And so they had a guy that left, actually went to the NFL, and so he hired me. And then that year in 1983, they changed the rules, and you couldn't have that part-time anymore. So I owe Charlie Bell for having a master's degree because he brought me to Florida, and then I ended up having to go to grad school. And like I said, for a year, got my master's and got hired full-time in the fall of 84. Gavin Hall took over.
Right. Just looking at some of the coaches you had the opportunity to work with and under, like I've already mentioned, Charlie Pell and Galen Hall, but then you had, obviously, your next stop was at North Carolina with Mac Brown, then Philip Fulmer at Tennessee for a decade and a half, and then, of course, Dabo at Clemson. Talking about your time in Chapel Hill with Mac Brown, when you guys arrived there, your first couple seasons, one-win seasons, but you quickly built the program up, 6, 7, 9, and then 10 wins in your final year there. What do you recall about that process?
It was really fun for me, guys, to help turn the thing around. But being growing up there, obviously, and then being a high school coach, too, you're kind of like one of them. So you could go into school and relate to a lot of people. And I just knew so many coaches in North and South Carolina because, like I say, with Kings Mountain being out there on the line, we used to scrimmage some schools in South Carolina. And Bruce Wallace, that was so successful down at Northwestern all those years, when I got to know him and that kind of thing. So it was a great experience just to turn the thing back because we weren't very good. And then Coach Brown kicked off the best player we had on the team, and we went 1-10 again. And it was really hard recruiting. It's only a little story, but Charlie Pell's one of them guys that you worked for. He was just a great guy. And like I say, when they fired Coach Pell and Galen Hall took over, Galen was great to work for also. But phone rings when you're 1-10 trying to go out and recruit. He answered and it started failing. I don't know how it's doing. I said, Coach, I'm all right. He said, well, what's my old dog do when it gets wet? I'm like, Coach, I ain't much in the mood for jokes. We're just 1-10 and trying to go recruit some good players. And he told me, he said, take it off and go to work. I hung the phone up. That was him, though. You know, he just called, let you know you think about it. He said, take it off and go back to work. So we went recruiting, and Coach Brown made us redshirt all those guys. And guys that went 1-10 ended up winning 10 games and playing Alabama in the Gator Bowl my last year there. That was a lot of fun. Very, very satisfying.
What did you call from background back to North Carolina? And did that surprise you? Did you think he wanted to get back into coaching after Texas and working for ESPN? And kind of surprised me a bit. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it didn't me. I thought Coach Mike wanted to get back into it. He's a good football coach. I don't know. I wasn't with him at Texas. We stayed in touch over the years. Very good friend. I consider him a dear friend. And actually have, you know, spoken with him and some of the staff that he's hired since to go back. But I said, I don't want to move anymore. And I don't, you know, I've done it. I love it. But not going to get back on the road, do all those kind of things. But I think he's the right guy. He'll go recruit and that kind of thing. So I knew that he wanted to get back, and he got close on a couple, but his wife, Miss Sally, is from down there, and she really didn't want to go a whole bunch of other places, but she was happy to go back home to Chapel Hill. So that's where he met her when he was the head coach there the first time. So it didn't surprise me. I think being out of it that long, you know, if it's much longer, you're probably not going to get back in. And you know, y'all mentioned all those coaches, but I was very blessed because he worked for Mac Brown. He goes to Texas, wins the national championship, worked for Philip Fulmer, and he won one at Tennessee, and Dabo Swinney. And so the last three guys I worked for won a national championship. So I've been very fortunate.
That Tennessee staff, when they won the national championship, what was that like being a part of that with Philip Fulmer and T. Martin, the quarterback, and just experiencing being a part of a national championship team?
I think both of them, that I was fortunate enough to be at two different places and win it. But the common thread is a bunch of coaches and players that did not care who got the credit. You didn't hear a bunch of guys walking around, well, I recruited this guy or I signed this guy. And you didn't have a bunch of players, well, that was my tackle. He just piled on. You didn't have that. You know, you didn't have a bunch of ego guys. I was with John Chavis and Steve Caldwell for a long time at Tennessee, and then Larry Slade came in and joined us right after we won that. But our offensive staff, you know, David Cutcliffe and those guys, you just had a whole bunch of guys that nobody cared. If you didn't have the great players in your area, go help somebody else and whoever signed them. But you just didn't have it's a special group. And when you have guys like T. Martin and you have an Al Wilson was the linebacker, he was the catalyst of that defense. You know, you didn't have to worry about the locker room. You didn't have to worry about those things. And then you go to Clemson, and you had very much the same thing with Ben Boulware and a guy from out there in North Carolina, Carlos Watkins, were seniors when we won it at Clemson. But very much the same kind of thing, a very unselfish staff, and guys y'all probably know from North Carolina State and North Carolina. Robbie Caldwell was there, Danny Pierman from Charlotte. Of course, Woody McCorvey was with Coach Ford the first time at Clemson. So you just got a bunch of good people that nobody cares. And the head coach, too, because if the head coach walks in, and well, you're not signing anybody, you're not doing it. So that Coach Former and Coach Sweeney, neither one, that wasn't the case. Hey, we're going to sign the best players. We don't care where they are as long as you're working and doing your area. So I think that was a common thread, but obviously, you got to have good players, but when you got a bunch of people that nobody cares who gets the credit, I think that's the best toward success.
Coach Brooks, talking about – I'm sorry, Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, what makes Coach Sweeney, what makes Dabo so special there at Clemson? I mean, he's not only – I mean, he's a great coach, but it's obvious there's something more to him than just being a great coach. He's got a very charismatic personality that just comes across anytime I hear him in an interview or see him on TV.
I think you're exactly right. There is more to him. And I think exactly what it is. I worked for him 8 years, and we stayed in touch. I go down every once in a while, watch practice or do that kind of thing, stay in touch, because about all the guys that I was coaching when I left have gone. They're all millionaires now. But still some guys there that we recruited from up in our area, like you say, Cornell and Tanner Muse from South Point and Justin Foster from Crest and a couple of guys from Tennessee also. But he just, when you ask that question, he's so real. What you guys see is the real deal. A lot of guys, I think, questioned when Terry Don Phillips made him the head coach, is he tough enough, is he, you know, that kind of deal, and there's no question he is. Y'all don't see behind the closed doors that his discipline's unbelievable, but he's so real with them. He tells them when they do good, and he tells them when they do bad. He don't beat around the bush. He's so real with you as a coach and with them. He's, I'm going to hire good coaches and let you coach, and he's not over in the middle of your business trying to coach your guys or that kind of thing, but Jeff Scott was his GA, and he made him the receiver coach, and look at the success he's had. But he's just a very real person with whoever he's dealing with. And he and his wife might be the givingest people God put on this earth. They make a lot of money, but they sure give a lot back and give away.
Coach, one of the key cogs on that coaching staff and someone that you had the opportunity to work very closely with, obviously, is defense coordinator Brent Venables. What a tremendous job that he's done. It always cracks me up to see his personal get back coach on the sideline, but that guy gets a workout during the game. Taking a look at Coach Venables, obviously you can't speak for him, and there's only so much you can say, do you think that Coach Venables is someone that could see a head job in his future? Do you think he's satisfied with the excellent gig he has being defensive coordinator?
No, Brent Venables could be a head coach. He could already be a head coach. But I think he loves what he's doing, and I don't think he could just be the head coach and not coach. He's so into coaching, and people see that on the field stuff. There's not any of that for show. He thinks he can make adjustments. He's been in his own package for so long at Oklahoma and Clemson. He thinks he can make adjustments all the way up to a ball snap. So he's out there trying to tell a safety to move 6 inches here or back up 3 steps. It's all about adjustments. And when he first came, I've always been a signal guy. I signaled for Carl Torbush at North Carolina and Kevin Steele at Clemson and John Chavis at Tennessee. And you can't signal for that guy because he waits so late, tries to make so much adjustment so he does his own. But he could be a head coach, but I think he's really happy doing what he's doing. He's got one son on the team, got another one committed coming to the team. And I think he and his wife really love living there. And I don't see him going anywhere. I mean, Coach Swinney is a great guy to work for. And I think he'll be there as long as he wants to be. And sure, you have those aspirations, but I think he's happy coaching. I don't know if Brent could do it if he wasn't coaching his guys every day. If they'll go farm over in the mountains of North Carolina and get over there some and that kind of deal. So, like you say, just Bubba can reach out and find out. But most of the time I am available. I don't know when you talk about the next couple of weeks or whatever. But obviously Clemson opens 2 weeks from today, and we got a football game a week from this Saturday with Florida Miami, I guess, kicking the whole thing off. But Clemson
yes, sir.
Plays Georgia Tech on that new ACC network 2 weeks from today. So it's about
yep.
here, guys.
To review
yes,
week one of college football, that would be great.
Right. Right. Okay. That'll be fun.
All right. Well, we really appreciate it, Coach. Thanks so much for your time. Have an excellent weekend, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay. You're welcome. And just shoot me a text, and I'll let you know what we're into.
All right. It sounds good. Take care, Coach.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Coach. That was a very entertaining interview, and I had a chance to go back and listen to that. Guys, that he is a really good coach, and you think about all the – he must be a really good coach when you hear those names of the people that picked him to be on the staff. He can't be a bad coach, right? I mean, you hear all those, like, four to five coaches.
You wouldn't think those guys would hire bad people, no. So.
Yeah. you think about it, all three of those won national titles, and two of those he was – part of those staffs, 1998 at Tennessee, and then I guess 2016 at Clemson.
Yeah, it's incredible to have two national championship rings and to have them that far apart on two totally different staffs.
Really cool, and we love having. There's something special about having these older coaches that they have such experience. You get to sit there and listen to them for hours, and we appreciate. He gave us a long time to be on, and I certainly love to have him back on very soon. Hey, guys, do you want to talk about the lines from the football games? I know there's some interesting lines as far as people game. I'm not a gambling man, but I am always fascinated to hear about. Let's start with East Carolina. What do you think about the line that you're hearing now, guys?
It's down to 17, up to 21. It seems fair, actually. I know not some Pirate fans would want to hear that, but quite honestly, after what they did to us last year, they got a lot of talent back on defense. I want to win the game, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. I do think Coach Houston's got to finish teaching these guys how to practice before they can learn how to win. To be quite honest with you, if we lose by 17 and play well, I really was feel pretty good about the future.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think when it's all said and done, I think the line can go down a little bit more, maybe to 14 points. What do you think, Bubba? I think two touchdowns is where it's going to stay. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I would quite honestly be surprised if it made it down that low, but who knows? I mean, We still have a little over a week into the game, so if heaven forbid something happened and there was an NC State player that suffered a key player that suffered an injury in the next few days or something, then it may get down to that point or below. But I think it will probably stay close to where it is now.
Well, something a little moppy-ish about that, Bubba. Heaven forbid something happens to one of your players. Like they take like a knee goes out or something like that, you know. Heaven forbid your quarterback shoulder gets hurt.
No. No Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding situation
right.
here.
All right,
the players will be on Hillsborough Street and
all of a sudden you see the quarterback. Oh God, what was that? Some dude beating like an all in black and
why?
Yeah,
that's a character. Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's been a long time ago. Well, yeah. So anyway, there were some people that really were into Tanya hovering over Nancy Kerrigan. I just thought that was interesting. So.
Yeah, was it Jeff Gaduli or something like that?
Cincinnati quarterback Geno Gaduli.
Yeah.
Well,
he was the hitman.
Let's talk about the other are there other games that like really come to mind when it, and there's tons of games, but are there ones that you guys picked out as far as the lines that really?
Well, you were talking about some lines earlier that you found.
Some of these were not so surprising, but just I saw some quotes by the commissioner of the American, Mike Oresko, and opening weekend is a huge opportunity for our league. You have Cincinnati, who beat UCLA last year out there. The Bruins are coming to Nippert Stadium, and so with that being the case, and the Bearcats are a three-point favorite, and I actually thought it might be a little bit larger favorite than that, but you also have Memphis. They're, I think, 5.5-point favorite over Ole Miss, who is coming to the Liberty Bowl. And then you have Houston making the trek to Norman to take on the Sooners. Lincoln Riley and company are a 24.5-point favorite. And that surprised me a little bit. I would have probably guessed that line would have been a little closer to 17, like the East Carolina NC State line. So I think right now, based on what I know, I take the Cougars and the points.
Yeah, it's not a bad pick. I mean, I like Oklahoma to win the game, but I definitely think Houston and Dana Holgorsen could cover that line for sure.
Something else, guys, kind of going away from the matchups, something that's been very cool to see in recent days is something the university and the athletic department, they're doing this through the UBE, so pirateware.com, also the store on ecupirates.com, and I believe Dowdy Student Stores, the Vault Collection, where we're unveiling merchandise with logos from different eras. And they're currently on the logos, the three main marks from the 70s, and the script pirates, and then also the pirate head, where you have the sword or knife in the mouth, and then also the interlocking EC logo, which is a cool mark. So I know I placed an order, I guess it was yesterday, for the purple hoodie with the script pirates. And it also had the pirate head, so those two marks on that one piece of apparel, and look forward to wearing that this fall once it's cool enough.
I've always been a fan of the pirate head with the cutlass in his mouth, and I also like the script pirates. So those are two logos that I wouldn't mind ordering. And you're interested to see with this from the Vault Collection what will be next. I would assume the Petey logo, as I call it, the kind of marching or running Petey that was used for so long in the 90s within the flying ECU.
Oh, yeah.
That was used in the late 80s and early 90s. I would imagine those logos will be released soon, and I expect they're going to sell really well when they release Liberty Bowl era Petey and flying ECU logo stuff.
You remember in the late 90s when they finally had a different – PD, they called him Pedro.
Yeah. Well, that logo was that really late was 90s. A different PD. The PD was still PD. You're just talking about the logo or the Pedro logo. And that logo is still used some sparingly. It's on our basketball practice facility.
Yeah, that was 1998. So I guess you had PD as the primary mark. From, I guess, 83 or 84 to 98. And then in 98, you had the new font and the ECU Sabre logo on on the football helmets, and then that pirate head that you just referenced.
Well, I think that some people are, like, so anti-PD, but as far as me having kids, they absolutely love Petey, like Petey, Petey, Petey. So I see this more going for more of a kids audience, I think, and that's why they did it. But I have no problems with the Petey, and that would be great to have that back. I think, by the way,
we redesigned Petey a few years ago, and they unveiled him in the game with the Petey that we're using now. But initially, they screwed up the color of his skin on the costume, and he looked like he was pink,
yeah,
sunburned or something. It was terrible. In the smile, they toned down the smile a little bit. I think what they did was just made his beard thicker or covered up some of it. But initially,
yeah,
the smile was just terrifying, and he looked like he had, maybe been stayed at the beach too long and had a bit of a sunburn.
I remember that. Wow,
I think that was the 2008 UTEP game, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds
something
right.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while. I do remember that.
No, it wasn't 08 UTEP. It wasn't 08 UTEP. 08 UTEP closed out the season.
Right. I think it was late in the year that it was unveiled.
It was.
It's kind of unusual timing.
Yeah, I'll ask you guys about as far as the I want to have one game. I think we talked about this, but I want to mention it again. We need to have one game where we have a throwback jersey, and we could do it one game a year. What throwback jersey do you want?
The uniform that we wore from 1989 to 1997. And
yeah, the Peach Bowl.
People refer to it as a Peach Bowl, but the uniform from that era, and that's the one that would immediately come to mind, and I think I'd probably go with.
Yeah, I don't know what else you would do. It's too recent, I would say, to like to do throwback to like the Conference USA Championship uniforms. I say that it's been 10 and 11 years. If you can believe that.
How about let's give some love for Terry Gallagher, a friend of the podcast. What about like the 78?
I just don't think enough people.
McCare.
Well, no, that's not right. I mean,
tearaway jerseys.
You know, if you go with the late 70s or you go with the early 80s uniform, 78 or 83, certainly there will be a group of fans that will remember that fondly. But that same group of fans that remember that fondly will also remember the Lewis Logan era, Peach Bowl, Liberty Bowl era uniforms. But you'll have a whole other generation that will also get into that. So I think that's going to have more mass appeal.
Well, hey, let's talk to Gilbert and Ryan Robinson in Houston, because we could do that, honor the Peach Bowl team, our good friend Mark Washington. And we got a lot of teams, a lot of guys that played on that podcast, played on the team that have been on our podcast. And it'll be 30 years in just 2 years. We'll have the 30th anniversary of the Peach Bowl year.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and not only the Peach Bowl team, but, you know, the Liberty Bowl team in 95 and all, same uniforms. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the Peach Bowl team. God knows they deserve all the accolades they get. They're the greatest team in the history of East Carolina Pirate football. But sometimes I think we forget about some of these other teams, like that Liberty Bowl team in 95. So you know, they wore the same uniforms. So let's honor, you know, every player that wore those uniforms during that Bill Lewis, Steve Logan era.
Sounds good to me. I have no problems with that. Hey, guess what? When we were wearing those uniforms, we were winning a lot of games, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that 91 uniform that we referenced, and you know, folks would go absolutely crazy if we come through the purple haze and have that on. Maybe say we didn't warm up in those, but folks would love it either way, whether it was a secret or not.
Yeah, and it's tough. It's hard to do in 2019, 2020, whenever. It's hard to keep things like that a complete secret nowadays with social media and eyes and cameras and phones everywhere.
Unless they waited to give the uniforms right before they went out.
Right? Then you got equipment people. I mean, there's still a way to
figure
it out. It's hard to keep that concept simple.
That would be cool. Hey, by the way, before we go, I got to throw another thing at you. What about hypotheticals here about There's a lot of talk about over the last month or two about potential. I think we know how it's going to happen now, but what about ways that the team could come into the stadium? Do you have a cool, what about you, Kyle? Do you have a cool way that Mike Houston could come in?
Yeah,
Purple Haze playing, or do you have a different song? What do you do?
What you could do, just to be different, you could, like, turn all the lights out in the stadium if it's a night game and just completely black. And then on the scoreboard, you light it slowly. You, like, bring it up from dim lit to bright light. And then start playing Dancing Queen. And then have the players come out with Coach Houston and all in, like, some really, like, elaborate, like, clothing over top their uniforms, like costumes, and come out the Dancing Queen and dance around on the field and then rip their clothes off to unveil their uniforms. And that really would throw the opponent off.
Is it an episode of Glee or is it a Pirate Ball? Oh, my God.
Really, well, throw them off. Our opponents wouldn't know what to think.
Yeah. All right.
What do you think, Bob? You like that idea?
It sounds more like a Broadway musical than it does.
Oh, you like that?
Spirit, yeah, I'm thinking about Remember the Titans. When they started dancing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, what do you think, Bubba?
I think it's pretty much good how it is. One thing that I would like to see is kind of the situation that we put ourselves in terms of the way we – all those years ago back in the early 2000s and the way we chose to do things at the Murphy Center, and we don't want to
blame Mike Hammer.
We don't want to beat a dead horse there, but it would be nice to have like what you have in the Boneyard end of the stadium, where you have that natural tunnel where the team can enter, so you didn't have to have an inflatable skull. And the inflatable skull's fine, but we should not have had to resort to that, so that we had something like that to have to come out of, so we weren't just coming out of the door of a building.
Y'all remember the boat Skip had during his era?
I remember that well because I remember the construction of it taking place during the summer, and folks like Tom Andreski, or Blue Water Pirate, as he's known on the message boards, but the locals there in Greenville were putting pictures on the message boards and so forth. But I think one of the funniest things that I remember about that is I think it was when we were playing Houston right after we had been upset at NC State when we were ranked 15th. We were still ranked there in the low 20s. With Houston coming to town, and unfortunately we got beat pretty soundly in that game, a couple touchdowns at least. But I remember when we were coming out, there's a video that's on YouTube with one of our fans saying, "Here we go, baby, knock down that door." The door from the ship is one of those, just the guy's voice is pretty comical.
I haven't seen that.
All right, guys. I think it's time to put this thing to bed.
All right, guys. Well, Bubba, I know we got some great guests coming up, and we'll have. By the way, folks, thank you for making 50 Pirates in 50 days a huge success, Bubba. We got some great ones coming up, right?
Yeah, we'll continue to talk to some guys from the Clarence Stasevich era. We'll also, you remember the Hart twins. We'll catch up with Darren and David Hart, a couple of guys who. Didn't have the most talent in the world, they're talented, but they were 5'9", 5'10", or what have you. They're a little undersized, so they didn't have the offers that some guys had, but they came to East Carolina and certainly proved themselves. Darren Hart was a freshman All-American back in 1990.
Well, the reason they both came to East Carolina is because they were Dave Hart's sons.
Right. Yeah, right. They were.
It's starting rumors here. Huh?
Yeah.
Of course, they would never do anything like that.
Darren Hart and Dave Hart Jr.
That's right. Dave Hart Jr. and Darren. Is that not right?
but no, Darren Hart, when I think of Darren Hart's career,
And this is a play that we discussed with him in the interview that you'll hear. But Darren had that pick six in a Liberty Bowl game against Stanford that was decided by 6 points, and that was the Pirates' only touchdown in that memorable win. So that's some that we're talking with. And then as far as just our general podcast, an excellent guest, a guy that's extremely well-known, and we really look forward to catching up with him. Timmy B, Tim Brando, will be joining the show here in the coming days.
Yeah, we got to get our act together with Timmy B gets on there. We can't have these Mickey Mouse podcasts we put out with Timmy B coming on the show. We got to get back in form, guys. Season's coming up here. We got to get our game with Coach Houston. You know, we're going to have to get him to come coach us up to get us back in form and get us ready. We got Tim Brando coming on, the legendary Timmy B, the home. Hey, will he be calling us from the Chateau Brando?
We're getting ready to find that. We'll find that out. Inquiring minds want to know. All right, guys. That'll be great. Appreciate you both for your hard work and your support of the podcast and me personally. Thank you guys very much. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.